Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
I'm Sonya Rappaport.
And today, Sonya, we continue the odyssey known as Beyond Good and Evil, Part 2, the 56th episode overall, the 9th episode of Season 4. Picking up from last week, where Apocalypse has set an evil plan in motion that's going to affect the entire universe. A whole bunch of mutants, good and bad, are going to fight and pair off. Lots of intrigue, lots of excitement. Does that remind you of a certain movie out right now as of April 2018?
As a matter of fact, it does.
Does it remind you of the movie Avengers Infinity War, maybe?
In some ways, yes, it does.
In some ways, yes. Uh-huh. So, the first spoiler, we will be talking about Avengers Infinity War after we review this episode. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be a full spoiler discussion. So if you haven't seen the movie as of yet, I guess don't listen unless you want to be spoiled. I like being spoiled, so if I was a listener to my own show, I would listen. But
you didn't just spoil anything. You only spoiled the end of our podcast episode.
That's true, but I'm saying if I were listening to our show and I hadn't seen the movie, I would still listen because I'm a sucker for spoilers.
I know you are, but I'm not. So
yes, you're not. But
I'd be turning us off.
Right. But anyway, that's not going to be towards the end of the show, and we'll let you know when that is, so yeah. you can turn it off temporarily. But we'll get to Avengers Infinity War later. Let's talk about this episode and continue this series, which I've said in the last episode, in part one, is one of my favorite X-Men mini-epics ever. Mm-hmm. Much in the spirit of an all-out epic, it opens in a very peculiar location, sort of a curveball, not what we're expecting. It starts at the Shi'ar Imperial Palace, where there's a fierce space battle going on. I'd like to mention that every time we see the Shi'ar, there's lots of laser bolts being fired all over the place, and I really appreciate the sound design of these laser bolts in the X-TAS universe.
That's to indicate their advanced technology, I think.
Right.
Because in the 90s, the future meant lasers.
Well, that's true. I still feel like the future means lasers.
You still think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just like these brand of lasers. They're different from Star Wars and Star Trek. They've got more of they're like more like machine gun lasers in a weird way. And I just appreciate the ferocity of them. Mm-hmm. I think they're cool. I mean, that's like the interesting thing about the Shi'ar. I think I could be wrong, but I think the first appearance of the Shi'ar in the comics came after Star Wars. And if not, it definitely... Star Trek was a thing. So I think in many ways the Shi'ar was like written to the comics as like, whoa, like sci-fi space opera is big right now. Let's put it in X-Men.
Yeah.
So it was like their own version, though. Chris Claremont and, you know, whoever the artist was at the time, Dave Cochran or John Byrne. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like their own take on like Star Wars, basically. And I think it's like a nice take.
It's pretty cool.
It just shows how like Marvel can just like take a thing that's popular and spin it their own way and make it just as like they know just how to sprinkle that fairy dust of like mythology and of like depth greater than what's actually shown, kind of thing. My point is, I've always enjoyed the Shi'ar as one of the like ultimate Marvel galactic forces. I think they're a good conceit.
Yeah, me too. I appreciate any time they show up in this show also. I always like seeing them.
Yeah, I love all the characters. The Shi'ar Imperial Guard, Landra, her crazy sister Deathbird.
Yeah.
The Emperor Deken, the Emkron Crystal. The whole Phoenix story. I mean, it's great.
Right. There's a lot to it, you know? It's like, it really adds to the world building of the X-Men.
Yeah.
And it gives you hope that, like... Well, I don't know if hope is the right word, but, like, the idea that in the real world, you know, like, maybe there's more to it than what we see and,
right.
You know.
Well, like I said, Marvel's the king at, like, introducing, a concept like the Shi'ar Empire or the Kree Empire, and they don't even need to show much of it, but in a few panels or in a few cartoon moments or in a few minutes in a movie, they have this masterful ability to lend the impression that there's more than what there might really be.
Right.
And
well, more than what they're showing you.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that there's this thing has been going on forever. Like they just can convey that so quickly. Mm-hmm. And in a way, like, it sets up their decades-run long length of comics where writers who keep contributing to the lore and stuff, and they build on it.
Yeah.
So I just think that's, like, a real testament to Marvel's, like, storytelling instincts and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Shi'ar, we were watching one of the newer episodes of Legion, and there was a Shi'ar technology reference.
Yeah, that's right.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Shi'ar is going to be... You know, I wouldn't say it's going to be front and center in the pop culture world, but the next X-Men movie, Dark Phoenix, is going to feature Shi'ar.
Uh-huh.
I think Jessica Chastain's playing Lilandra or maybe Deathbird or something. She's going to be one of the Shi'ar people, supposedly.
Right.
And supposedly that movie is not looking very good right now. They had to, like, do extensive reshoots because they said it was, like, shittily made.
Oh.
And the new director, Simon Kinberg, who's written a lot of other X-Men movies, this is, like, his first time directing, they said that he did, like, just didn't do a good job preparing. So now they have to do expensive reshoots and, like, bring all the stars back.
Oh.
And they said because the sets have been discarded, they have to recreate a lot of the sets with CGI.
Oh, my God.
And it's going to look crappy. It, like, it reminds me of the problems they had with Justice League.
Yeah.
When they had to bring back Henry Cavill and reshoot with Joss Whedon, they had to digitally remove his mustache.
Right.
So who knows what facial hair or other, like...
details are going to run amiss.
Yeah, exactly.
This will be a nice hunt for all the fans.
Yeah. It's, like, it's sad. I mean, I was kind of looking forward to the Dark Phoenix movie. Even though it's supposedly going to be the last of its kind. It's going to be, like, the last Fox X-Men movie.
Uh-huh.
Assuming the Marvel-Disney-Fox merger goes through. But, I don't know. It's going to be crappy, I think. I think, you know, X-Men Apocalypse wasn't that good. Even though I kind of enjoyed it at the time.
Too, yeah.
But, like, really, if you rewatch it, which I have, it's, like, doesn't hold up. We'll get to that one day. You know, so, I mean, Deadpool's been excellent.
Yeah.
And Logan was obviously excellent.
Right.
And Deadpool 2's coming out. That's going to be cool.
Well... anyway, we'll see.
Yeah, anyway. All right, like, back to this. So, Shi'ar Empire, it's an assault on the Imperial Palace. We get a little taste of the mythology here. Deathbird is the sister of Lilandra.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, like, this crazy power-mad lunatic, sort of like Lilandra's other sibling, Deken, who has been sort of banished to the Emkron Crystal. So she's got a lot of crazy in her family.
Yeah.
She's, like, the only normal one. It's just surprising. You were commenting on Deathbird's insane outfit.
Yeah, she has these, like, metal tubes that lead to, like...
the breastplate of her boobs.
Is it? Or is it, like, a mouthpiece that, like, sits underneath her chin? It's hard to say.
Yeah.
There's some weird, like, metallic components to her outfit.
I mean, it went by quickly, and I don't remember, you know, I don't, like, fully have memorized the look of Deathbird. You know, I remember her from the Sega Genesis video game. She's one of the first villains you face.
Right.
But, you know, I just love the look of the Shi'ar in general. They're these, like, avian bird people in a weird way with weird facial tattoos or something, and they look really cool and interesting. So, you know, she's trying to dethrone her sister Lilandra, who's now the Empress, the good Empress. There's an attack on the Imperial Palace. Gladiator's there to defend her, but Deathbird's ace in the hole is her new ally, Apocalypse, another guy with tubes coming out of his outfit.
Yeah, but for him, it makes more sense because he's, like, artificially kept alive for millennia.
So, I mean, the story with Apocalypse...
I don't know why that makes sense.
Yeah.
But...
I mean, I'm not an expert on Apocalypse, but I think the story on his outfit is that he was just, like, he was, like, the first mutant born on Earth in, like, prehistoric Egyptian times.
Right.
In one of the old kingdoms. And he stumbled across a... I think he was, like, outcast from his own village. I don't know what his mutant power was in the ancient Egyptian times.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, he was, like, cast out as a freak. So he's wandering the desert, and I think he found a ship by celestial aliens. The Celestials are, like, the super cosmic force in the Marvel universe, where they've got, like, insane power, and they're one of, like, the original... I don't know if they're quite, like, of the levels of the gods of, like, Ego and Eternity and Death and, you know, Galactus. They're like, maybe they're, like, a half step under, or maybe they are of that level. It's like you get to that weird, like, ultra level of Marvel power people.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he finds their ship of ancient technology, and we've seen that we've met this ship before. In a previous episode where Beast falls in love with the artificial intelligence of it.
Right.
Anyway, on the ship, like, he finds the, like, the outfit.
Yeah.
And it, like, it merges with his body in some weird techno-organic way, and that's how he's a part of the reason of how he's allowed.
Still alive, yeah.
Yeah, and can do, like, a lot of his insane mutant powers of growing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but he also, you know, they imply in these episodes, too, that he has some kind of Lazarus pit as well. So
right.
He's got a lot of stuff going on. A lot of weird, like, life expanding things at his disposal.
Right.
You know, that ties in with the overall theme of Beyond Good and Evil, too. All right, anyway. Apocalypse is the ally with Deathbird, and she thinks Apocalypse is going to, like, kill Lilandra for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting. I think Gladiator could probably fight Apocalypse, because he's got essentially the strength and power of Superman. So I don't know how Apocalypse would stack up to Superman, but whatever.
Yeah, it seems like it might be a fair match, at least.
Yeah. But Apocalypse backstabs Deathbird. He just is interested in the Shi'ar Courtier. Oracle. Was it Courtier or Courtesan?
I don't know.
I don't know either. But either way, she's a psychic. And Apocalypse's plan here, spoilers, is to kidnap, like, as many psychics as he can for whatever his dastardly deeds are.
Right, but Lilandra's also a psychic.
Yes.
What? I don't know why he doesn't just kill two birds with one stone.
Plot hole.
Yeah.
I don't know. They kind of overlook that. Maybe her psychic powers are only to the extent that she can only connect with Xavier because they have the bond deeper than love thing.
Oh.
And that's, like, the one link. They're, like, true loves across, you know, the galaxy or something.
Yeah.
But it seems like she's a psychic in her own right.
Huh.
So you're right. I don't know why he doesn't also take Lilandra, but he kidnaps this Oracle person.
Brings her to the axis of time where he's been hanging out.
Right.
And he has these tubes to contain all of his psychics that he's capturing.
What a shitty prison to be thrown in a glass tube.
Yeah.
I like right before he leaves, Deathbird's like, Apocalypse, you promised me you'd kill Lilandra.
Uh-huh.
And he says, I lied.
Yeah.
That is just like, we talked about last week, the performance of the actor who does Apocalypse. He's like this, you know, great Star Trek actor. I think his name is, it's John Colicos.
Uh-huh.
And his performance as Apocalypse is just amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I really can't express how, like, perfect this guy nailed this cartoon. Like, he makes the character of Apocalypse epic, interesting, soulful, you know, all this stuff where Apocalypse could just otherwise be a generic weird villain.
Uh-huh.
With a stupid name. But Apocalypse in the show is not that. He is awesome.
Yeah.
And very much, again, Avengers Infinity War features I called it Avengers Affinity War.
It's a different movie.
Right. Avengers Infinity War, Thanos.
Right.
They really did an awesome job with him, as we'll discuss. So I find it, like, interesting.
Parallel.
A little parallel there. Here's another, like, great villain. Also sort of purpley colored.
Uh-huh.
You know, roaming around with, like, a psychopathic scheme that involves the entire universe.
Yeah.
So that's our first connection. Anyway, yeah, and just his badass coldness. I lied. just walks away. Doesn't even have to say anything else.
Right, goes back through his portal. He's like,
Yeah. So back on Earth, Cyclops is still upset over his second ruined wedding. He just can't get this correct. Poor Cyclops.
Third time's a charm.
Cyclops is so much in the way of his love with Jean Grey, just in general. Like, Wolverine is always a thorn in his side.
Yeah.
His weddings are always interrupted. In the comics, Jean Grey dies several times, and there's clones of Jean Grey, and there, you know, like, all sorts of, like, crazy shit. Like, he ends up having affairs with the White Queen because she's seducing him. Like, there's all... Cyclops' love with Jean Grey is never, like, sort of meant to be, despite how, in the 90s anyway, it was, like, set up like they're, like, a true romance, like Peter Parker and Mary Jane.
Uh-huh.
Kind of thing. Although I should say Peter Parker and Mary Jane, their romance was shattered asunder in more recent comics too.
Well,
right,
you know, it's been decades, they gotta
but there also were, like, decades where these things were, like, infallible truths, you know.
Yeah,
where, like,
yeah,
the characters were together for a long ass time. And then, at some point, they break them up. Cyclops is upset. They don't know what to do. Professor X, back at the Axis of Time, we see Mr. Sinister wandering around. Jean is captured. She's still in her wedding dress, which is kind of funny.
Right, in her glass tube.
Right, and she sort of asks Mr. Sinister, what are you doing here? And his motivation for working with Apocalypse is kind of funny. Apocalypse, like, pretty much promised him his ultimate dream, which is, like, and when it's, like, stated, like, very, like, matter-of-factly, it's almost kind of, like, small.
Uh-huh.
But, like, so his dream is to, he wants to breed his own brand of humans where he can do genetic experiments. And Jean's like, that'll take generations to see the results. You can't, you're not immortal. You can't live that long. First of all, Mr. Sinister is kind of immortal. He certainly has long ass, I think he's several hundred years old. So I don't know how immortal he is. I guess he can be killed, but anyway, he's like, oh, well, at the axis of time, I can watch generations go by the blink of an instant and thus, like, see all my experiments come to be. And it's almost like when you have access to the axis of time, don't your dreams automatically become, like, you'd have to reevaluate them a little bit if, like, you can literally do anything and you have an infinite time? Because it's like, at one point, you get bored of that rather quickly. It's like, okay, you've made all your human experiments.
Well, but for you, it's not that you're waiting around for eternity. Your life is still passing.
Right.
It's like a general relativity.
But it's like a video game. It's like he's made his human experiments. He's seen them, like, in 5 minutes. He's seen how the results come out. Then what? You know, he's got all this other time to kill. I mean, is he going to keep tinkering with human DNA forever?
But he hasn't gone through the first iteration of that yet.
That's true, He's like,
so
he's tantalized.
He's not thinking that far in advance. He's not playing the long game. He just wants to, like, do this thing that he's been dreaming about forever.
This one itch he needs to scratch.
Yeah, and then he'll deal with the rest of it, I guess.
Right, that's true. But I'm just saying that if it was me, I would immediately think about, like, oh, like, you're going to give me what I want in 10 minutes' time. And then it's like, all right, my life's dream is going to just be, like, I'm going to see it all play out. Okay, but then, like, what am I gonna do? Learn how to play piano or something?
Like, maybe. I mean, what I keep thinking about with this axis of time is that him, like, Sinister and Apocalypse keep referring to the fact that time passes a lot more slowly for them, like, in the axis of time than it does on Earth.
Right, time's kind of frozen.
Like, Cyclops is there, like, pining away on Earth, you know. Jean is, like, stuck in this tube in the axis of time. Technically, like, you know, over the matter of the day or whatever that this episode takes, like, Jean should be, like, hundreds of years in the future while Cyclops is still in the present day. You know what I mean?
True, but if one travels to the axis of time, then it's...
You have access to go... sorry, it's hard to separate those two. It's like to go back to whatever point in time you want. Is that part of the thing?
That's either part of the thing, or it's like once you're at the axis, like, things are kind of stuck. So it doesn't matter that, like, maybe, like, 1,000 years has passed since Jean was kidnapped and her, like, everyone's dead. But it's like if Cyclops finds a way to travel the axis of time, he's sort of, it doesn't matter because time has, like, no meaning there. So,
but if time has no meaning there, then what are they talking about that it moves slowly?
I have no idea. But we do learn a clue in this episode. Like, we're going to learn more about what this axis of time is and what it does. Mm-hmm. In this episode, Apocalypse gives us the clue. He says it's the place where all times cross. So, But to answer your question, if, like, time's coming in from every direction and, like, of all possibility, then it's like, who knows how, like, compared to human time, it all plays out.
Well, I'm just saying it because Sinister and Apocalypse keep referring to it that way. Like, their understanding of it is that, like...
They're sort of outside of time?
No, that thing, that in a blink of an eye, right?
Yeah. Like, oh, so, okay,
time
so
on Earth is passing.
Apocalypse says that, like, I was traveling through time. He stole Cable's time travel cube, as we remember.
Right.
And he says, time in its infinite, or fate in its infinite wisdom crashed me in the axis of time. It's the place where all times cross. And it says, like, I spent centuries here learning its secrets and many powers. For me it was like in real time it was like a blink of an eye, but I was there for centuries.
Oh, that's the opposite of what I thought.
Oh, is it?
I don't know. Okay, we'll
it's
see more.
It's
we'll
stupid. See more. I mean, it's the axis of time. It's ridiculous. It's great. I love it, though.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I love everything
it's
about
crazy.
It. Yeah. And then they cut to, like, they remind you what Bishop's doing. Like, he was also, like, bumped off course in his time traveling. He's not at the axis of time. He's in, like, the...
One of the paths that leads to the axis of time.
Right. He's, like, walking around on a time rainbow ribbon with a bunch of floating time mirrors and stuff. So that's what Bishop's up to. So Professor X and Cyclops, they sort of figure out what Apocalypse is up to. They realize he's capturing psychics. They put two and two together. They realize there's a lot more psychics on Earth. They want to use Cerebro to track them to see when Apocalypse will come out next. And Storm's very annoyed at this plan. She doesn't want to use people as bait. Gambit makes the clever joke. He says, well, if they're psychic, don't they? They'll already see it coming.
Yeah.
And she's like, that's not funny, Gambit.
Yeah, but actually,
it is kind of funny. And it's almost like a relevant point. I mean, yeah. You know. So I don't know what Storm's like all upset about. So they get in a big fight about bait. Like, she thinks that we shouldn't do this plan just for the sake of saving Jean. And Cyclops says it's not fair. It's not about Jean. And he's also right.
I mean, for him, it is about Jean, but right. Also, he's right.
It's about not just saving about the universe.
Yeah. Isn't it always?
Right. And then, okay, so they plan. They have this plan to, like, track where all the psychics are. Cut to England. We see Castle Worthington. So our American industrialist, Warren Worthington III, I guess has a castle in England. Mm-hmm. We all know he was transformed from angel into archangel by Apocalypse. He hates Apocalypse now himself, although he has the curse of being blue-skinned. Mm-hmm. He's got the metal wings. Anyway, we see a...
anyway, he looks great.
Yeah. Well, he's in his classic angel outfit, which is kind of interesting, yeah. With the golden halo over his chest and the blue version. Uh-huh. It's got like a red and a blue version, which is kind of interesting. I don't know why he switches. But anyway, a purple-haired ninja is sort of running onto his estate. Mm-hmm. And this ninja is Psylocke. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say she's not one of the more famous X-Men, but she kind of is. Betsy Braddock, she is an interesting character, sort of. She was introduced in the comics as this, like, British psychic character in the X-Men in the 80s. At some point, they realized that's not that interesting. She was kind of boring. So they had this convoluted plot where I think, like, her body got switched with a, like, Asian femme fatale assassin. Uh-huh. And so she went from being, a boring British lady to a, like, super hot, like, anime, you know, woman. Uh-huh. Asian lady with a British accent, mind right. you. Like, okay. Her accent, I think, traveled to the new body as well.
Can you tell an accent in... They spell favorite with a U or something.
You know, that's a good question. Like, I feel like I don't know why I have this, like, set in my mind that Psylocke is supposed to have a British accent, but I think she is.
Okay.
I just remember reading the comics in the 90s. She's kind of, like, made famous by Jim Lee's art. You know, he drew her, drew that image of her in the purple, like, spandex bathing suit thing. I think they just, like, made a big point of, like, making it seem like she had a British accent.
Okay. So in her assassin iteration, her psychic powers are these purple daggers, like psychic daggers, that she can, like, shoot around and, like, manifest and disappear.
You know, I don't know about the like, they keep showing the shooting in the cartoons and in the movies almost, too. The dagger is, like, always... I feel like it's not what it was in the comics, at least I remember in the 90s. I think she just had a dagger that would... a short little blade that would come out of her... the top of her hand, uh-huh. And that was it. She'd have to, like, stab you. It was like a cool little like laser dagger on her hand.
Laser.
Yeah, but in the cartoons and the movies, it's just always showing it differently. I think in the X-Men Apocalypse movie, we saw Psylocke, and she had like a sword or something.
Yeah,
or like her dagger came out of her hand and was like really long.
Yeah,
I was like, that doesn't look right.
But
I like it as cool little Wolverine, almost purple lasers out of her hands instead of it being like this long thing or a thing that shoots.
When she was the British woman, though, before the assassin switch, body switch, was that her psychic power, or did she have, like, different psychic powers?
I don't remember. She wasn't that big of a character until they did the switch.
Okay.
So I just know she was a psychic. She's the sister of Captain Britain, who is, like, the leader of Excalibur, the British X-Men team.
Yeah.
That supposedly it's like a really great comic. I'd never read an Excalibur, but the teams, at least the classic team, was Captain Britain, Nightcrawler, Kitty Pryde, and a few others. Mm-hmm. I don't know much about Excalibur. All I know is that every time anyone talks about it, they say it's really good. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, you know, she's got a familial relation there, and she kind of hints at Captain Britain in this episode.
Yeah.
I think Captain Britain's already come up as a cameo in this show at some point, too.
Yeah, I think we've seen him.
Or he comes... He might even come up again going forward, and even in this series. But... So she's the sister of Captain Britain. An interesting debate. Wolverine, at some point, they're tracking her, and Wolverine refers to her as, like, a black-haired, like, ninja or something.
Yeah.
And... We've talked many times before about the color highlights in black-haired characters' hairs.
Uh-huh.
Like, for instance, Wolverine's got black hair, but it's got blue highlights.
Yeah.
Now, is his hair blue, or is it just the style, the color styling of an artist in a comic book that makes it blue?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, blue's a good contrast of shadowing and stuff. We've had that debate, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But I think even more so as Psylocke, she's supposed to have purple hair.
Right.
But when Wolverine refers to her as black-haired, that really throws the whole...
Blew your mind, didn't it?
I just don't even know, like, how the people writing this episode, the cartoon writers, would see Psylocke, the character, and think, like, oh, yeah, that's black hair, the purple, just ignore all the purpleness, you know?
Yeah, well, also because the way they draw her in this cartoon is...
Full-on purple hair.
Purple hair,
yeah. So I just always find that interesting. I like that. That's like a weird quirk of comic books. Just the color shading of black hair. But whatever. You know, it's a pretty good Psylocke. We've seen that. You know, it looks right.
Yeah.
She's a thief for some reason. She's like got like a Robin Hood thing going on. She's stealing from Warren Worthington to like sell for her brother's cause.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know how that makes sense. He seems like to be a pretty legit straight superhero. I don't know if he needs illegal funding.
Right.
Like, I think his outfit is like a Union Jack, basically. Yeah. You know, something like that. You know, that's what she's up to. I was expecting a British accent. We don't get one from her.
Right.
I could just be totally insane. People have to let me know if whether or not, like, what's the deal with Psylocke's accent.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be British, especially for Brothers Captain Britain.
Mm.
So that's, like, a little jarring. So, you know, and then she's, like, tangling around with Archangel. He's wants to flirt with her a bit, you know, instead of just treating her like a straight criminal. He's kind of in that, like, weird, like, flirty James Bond man mode where, like, some beautiful woman is, like, committing a crime, and instead of punishing her, he's kind of just like, oh, let's dance kind of thing,
right.
You know? I feel like that's in a very, like, specific rich man's problem.
Like a Batman Catwoman type of dynamic.
I think it even goes beyond that. I just feel like if you're a rich, wealthy, those are the same thing. If you're a wealthy bachelor man in the world, you probably have a lot of beautiful women in your orbit, like coming to your cocktail parties, to your social gatherings, and some of them might be thieves, assassins, spies. You know, like, so it's like you're always having to deal with these intriguing women who have access to your estate. And I don't know. That's just a theory I'm putting together right now. Like, I wonder I think that is like. That is true in the real world.
I don't think so.
No, it definitely... Like, no, look, if you're a rich man, you go to all these stupid fancy parties, and there's lots of beautiful women there.
And some of them are spies?
No, I'm just saying that, like... Right, not that some of them are spies. I'm just saying that these are the characters you're dealing with in your life.
Uh-huh.
So it would be logical that if one of... You know, that, like, a crook would have an easiest access to... A beautiful woman who's a crook would have easiest access to a billionaire than a regular woman, kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like a supermodel-y, good-looking woman.
What is your theory?
Never mind. Let's move on. You know, Wolverine, they're on the lookout for Psylocke. He's also there, Shard, by the way. The Cable's, not Cable, Bishop's sister, who's also traveling in time. You know, there's some action going on. The Psylocke, she incapacitates Warren Worthington at first, but she goes down to the dock somewhere, by the Tower of London or the Bridge of London, the London Bridge.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. Wolverine and Shard are, like, standing up there on the Tower Bridge, like, looking down at everything.
Right. Yeah. Wolverine does, like, a cool deep dive into the water there. Shard's impressed because he's an old man. You know, Archangel confronts Psylocke again as she's stealing all his fancy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then they're all ambushed by Sabretooth and Mystique. They're lackeys of Apocalypse 2, apparently.
Yeah.
And they get into a fight.
So again, another like Infinity Wars
yes.
parallel here. It's like you've got all these little vignettes.
Right.
Like you've had character development with like almost all of the characters that show up,
mm-hmm.
and that like gives license to just put all of them together in one episode where you don't really have to do a lot of explaining and just.
And like, within a vignette, it tops itself, much like Avengers Infinity War. Like, there's yeah. a little vignette going on, and then, like, oh my god, look who showed up now.
Right.
In this case, it's Magneto.
Yeah.
So he, like, crashes the party. He sort of, he like, lifts a like, a big, like, yacht boat thing out of the water and uses the anchor to magnetize, like, tie up Wolverine and magnetize him to the boat. That very much reminded me of X-Men First Class, where... we meet where Professor X meets Magneto for the first time. They're at that mission. Magneto's trying to kill Sebastian Shaw,
mm-hmm.
and Sebastian Shaw's got like this enormous yacht or submarine or something that he uses, and Magneto's in the water like flying the anchor chains everywhere underwater, trying to like destroy the submarine or tie people up with it.
Yeah,
and it's just very much like that's another little movie moment that I think was might have been subconsciously or consciously yanked from this cartoon. So something to keep in mind there.
Or don't.
Yeah. This is just my running theory that like so much of like the current MCU and the X-Men movie universe has been ripped off of the show. And like mainly because the show like got there first with a lot of things and did things right. Like we said, speaking of Avengers Infinity War, this is like Beyond Good and Evil is its own little like insane team up epic tale like we just described.
Yeah.
With all the Marvel characters, the Marvel stakes, the Marvel magic, the Marvel fairy dust,
uh-huh.
like it's got all of that, and it did a really good job. So if you like what you're seeing in the MCU right now, like it really this is like ground zero for a lot of that,
yeah.
having been experimented with and came first in a cinematic, not in the comic books really got there first, but in the way where it's like coming to life in some form,
right?
So they kidnap Psylocke, she gets away. I mean, not she, Magneto gets away. Here's a funny note that you noticed. Gambit and Storm arrive.
In the tornado, yeah.
Right.
A really, like, well-targeted tornado brings them there. They're swirling around and, like, land down next to this, like, ship situation where Wolverine is tied up. And then, like, Storm uses... They touch down, and then Storm uses a tornado to, like, clear the debris.
A real targeted one.
That's next to the ship.
Yeah.
So that, like, they can get
Wolverine
out of it. Yeah. And... I just like Storm. I like when her powers are put to good use.
Well, as
we've talked before about how ambiguous it is, like how targeted or generalized
right.
her powers are shown, and it's kind of like whatever's convenient to
right.
the storyline. But
I thought it was funny how I think we were making fun of it in the Pride of the X-Men episode where Storm uses her tornadoes to get the X-Men around too.
Right.
I was like, that's stupid.
Right.
And here she's doing the exact same thing in this show. She just, you know, it can't be pleasant being a traveler.
Gambit,
yeah.
Because he's swirling around in that tornado.
I mean, that leads to the question, are they swirling around or are they just levitating in the middle of a tornado?
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's more likely.
You would think that they're swirling around. Like, that's what it seems like is happening. But, right, who knows? Anyone who's ever been caught in a tornado, let us know what it's like to be inside a tornado. and you know, we mentioned it, Storm, or maybe we didn't. We talked about it in the Facebook group anyway, that Storm was supposed to die in this series, because Beyond Good and Evil is supposed to be the series conclusion of the entire show.
Yeah.
And that whole plan was made asunder. Fox changed their minds, so they had to change the whole script around, but Storm was going to make a heroic sacrifice.
Mm.
I was against that. Like, I'm happy that that didn't happen. I don't think Storm should die.
Yeah.
I think she's a character that should always survive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually a fan of no characters dying in the like. I like all my heroes living.
Well, essentially, that's the way it is because characters die all the time, and
right.
then there's crazy plot convolutions that bring them back to life.
Speaking of which, Magneto. The reason Magneto's working with Apocalypse, you would think that's a little off brand for him, at least in this series, because he's not that evil.
Yeah.
He wants his wife resurrected.
Right.
His wife that I don't think we've like discussed or has come up on the show.
Right. Yeah.
Like who knows who his wife was? I mean, we know he's had children with Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch and I guess Polaris. So interesting.
Yeah.
That's his motivation, although I think there's going to be some backstabbery going on there, if memory serves correct. Spoilers. Then the episode sort of ties up in Cable's future, 3999 AD. He's mounting a mountain with his son. They've got like laser pellet sticks climbing a mountain, and Cable can't do anything about Apocalypse because he lost his time cube to him.
Yeah.
So he needs to steal a time machine. His son points out that time travel's banned by all governments because it was too dangerous, and they would have nailed Cable too if they knew that he had one. Mm-hmm. But Cable gives us some other like glimpses into our potential future, where he says that just like denuclearization in the 21st century, all governments held on to one nuke just in case, which doesn't make sense from a denuclearization standpoint. How is one nuke like?
Yeah, it's not better.
The whole point is, like, you would need, like, maybe 10 to 15. Like, I feel like 10 would make more sense, because most countries really only have, like, 10 major cities that you would need to destroy.
It doesn't make sense anyway. If the whole point of denuclearization is that nobody has nukes, so, like, the whole planet doesn't have to die, then why would you hold on to one, just in case of what?
Right. I don't know. It's, like, just to destroy their capital city. I mean, to me, like, the real instinct wasn't so much, like, violence. It was maybe you hold on to your nuke for asteroids or something. They figure, like, there's some reason. I mean, there are legitimate uses of nuclear weapons in that sense, that you might need them to blow...
split apart an asteroid.
Right, blow asteroids off course, or to, like, nuke the polar ice caps of Mars, like Elon Musk wants to do. So, and then the episode ends on a cliffhanger. Cable's off to steal the government's time machine.
Right, so there's the connection, is that, like, the government... every government also held on to just one time machine, just in case of whatever.
Right, so there's still lots of time machines. There's 200 countries out there. So.
Right. Right, so there's still 200 nuclear weapons and 200 time machines.
Right, we know exactly how many. 200
plus.
Right. Who knows? So that's funny. So the episode ends. I think another excellent episode. I'm happy to see Psylocke. I'm happy to see all the little vignettes, all the major characters come together, the Shi'ar Empire. Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's good.
Beyond Good and Evil, still one of my favorites.
Yep.
Last thoughts on Psylocke's hair color?
Purple.
Got it. Yeah, me too. I think it's purple.
Wolverine, black.
Yes, with blue highlights.
Yes.
Although you say it's black, but in this show, it's pretty decidedly blue.
No, it's black with blue highlights.
I know. Okay, but I don't know. When he takes it off, though, it's pretty blue.
Whatever. We've gone down this road before.
Yes, I don't even care. Avengers: Infinity War.
Okay, if you haven't seen the movie and you don't want spoilers, turn us off now.
I you know, I just want to, like, talk about the whole spoiler culture. I think it's so stupid. You know, like, there's this Twitter thing going around, like, Thanos demands your silence. Don't spoil the movie.
Uh-huh.
But someone made the point, I think it was in the New York Times review I read of the movie, they say it's, like, there's something so stupid about it because it's like, everyone's got to, like, swear to secrecy. And then, but then a week later, everyone knows what happens, and then a week after that, everyone forgets, like, even what happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Kind of, it's this whole, like, culture of, like, spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. I agree that it's just, like, overwrought, and, you know, so, but, I mean...
Well, but you're a person who likes spoilers. You will read the last chapter of a book and then go back and start at the beginning.
Yeah, I'm weird like that.
I do not... I don't like having it spoiled, like, because it ruins the adventure of it a little bit if I know what's going to happen at the end.
I'm talking about two separate things. I totally agree. If you do not want to know what happens at the end, do not spoil it for people.
Yeah.
But the culture around spoilers...
Like, it's some holy thing.
It's obnoxious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just, like, this whole, like just constant warning about spoilers and the spoiler... It's, like, silly, because we're not talking about...
anything that really matters.
No, exactly. Like, it's just this, all this, like, uptightness and anxiety about it.
But I also find it pretty easy to avoid if you really want to avoid
it. Yeah, that, exactly.
You know that some movie came out.
Yes.
Like, you just, you know, make it your business not to watch any YouTube reviews.
Or read Twitter. I mean, like...
It's, like, not that big a deal to, like, you know...
It's really
largely
easy.
Avoid social media for, like, a little while until you catch up. So... well, whatever. Anyway.
Right. So we're going to spoil the movie. We're just going to talk about whatever happens. You know, like I said, in the 48 hours after this podcast is released, it's going to be a little hot if you haven't seen the movie. You know, lots of people have not seen it yet, probably.
Yeah.
Although, judging by the box office numbers, it seems like the entire world has gone to see it. It made like $106 million in one day on Friday alone.
Yeah. Which is absurd. Well, also, it's riding on the coattails of Black Panther, which was
an enormous smash hit.
What did they say? Like the third highest grossing movie?
Might have like been number one in America now or something. I don't know. It's close. Yeah, right. It's like in the top three.
Right.
It's still playing. It was still playing in the movie theater we went to yesterday.
Yeah.
It's so weird to see that. Right, but like in 2 weeks no one's gonna care and this podcast will be up forever, like, so that's why we're talking about everything.
Yeah.
Anyway, this movie, we saw it on Saturday morning at 9:10 in the morning.
Yes.
We got there at like 8:45. It cannot be overstated how much movies suck these days with commercials and previews. It took like, I don't know when the movie started. It was almost 10 o'clock, I feel like, when the movie started.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We were sitting there forever. And then the movie itself took forever. We were out. Like, we thought, like, it was so early going to this movie at 9:10 in the morning. We walked out of the theater past noon.
Yeah.
So it was like a whole, it was like the half the day was gone.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm going to talk about all my complaints right off the bat. And that's one of them, is that this movie was, this is a real obvious joke, it took an infinity to pass.
Yeah.
I don't think that's like a bad point of the movie. I enjoyed it. And I liked everything I saw. But like, as far as like my day being spent, like, you're going to have to spend half a day like,
well, that's
watching
on
this.
You, though. We yeah. could have gone to see it at 8 o'clock at night, and we could have walked into the theater a half hour late so that we knew we would miss all the commercials, and then it wouldn't have been such an epic journey for us to see this movie.
I mean, honestly, like, the issues with movies, like, if you want to see the movie on the opening weekend, you have to get there early to get a good seat.
Yeah.
So...
Well, it's still on us. We didn't have to go see it the opening weekend. We could have waited a couple of weeks.
I probably would have had no problem waiting a couple of weeks and gotten to a more empty theater where you could have strolled in a half an hour after the start time.
Yeah.
But I wanted to make sure we talked about it on the podcast. I want to be in the zeitgeist. So that's entirely on me. I mean, like, I'm sure not many people are, like, dying to hear our opinion in that sense, but still, I wanted to be there, talk about it while it's hot.
Uh-huh.
So, like, that's just more, again, more complaining about movies in general. It's not really Avengers' fault.
Uh-huh.
It's a long-ass movie. So that's my one, number one complaint. It took all day. beyond that, I honestly didn't have many complaints. I thoroughly thought it was great. It was everything I could have wanted. I don't think they made many missteps in terms of, like, plotting, narrative, character development, jokes, satisfying ending to an extent. I thought it checked all the boxes for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very pleased with the product I was getting. I mean, I've, you know, like many of our fans, I've seen all of the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
So I, like, knew everything that was going on. Like, nothing was confusing to me.
And it was
a payoff.
I was wondering that. Like, it seemed like this movie was really geared towards people who have seen all of the other movies, because there are some things about character relationships and stuff like that that they really don't explain, and they don't have to if you've seen the other movies and
right.
you kind of know what's going on in this universe.
Yeah.
I wonder if someone decided to just jump in at this movie, if they would be confused at all about those things, or if it just, like, rolls off and you get the point of the plot anyway.
I mean, someone made a good point. I think it was Red Letter Media, who I cite a lot. They're real heroes to us. they said in their review this morning that, like, you almost didn't need the Doctor Strange origin movie, because he just appears in this one. He's really good.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, it's Doctor Strange. Like, if you have a general awareness of comics, you know who Doctor Strange is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what's the point of, quote-unquote, introducing him in a movie all by itself?
You know, though...
It's like, you can just have him, and people will say, like, wow, Doctor Strange. I know who Doctor Strange is.
I really enjoyed the Doctor Strange movie,
yeah,
though.
Me too. I loved it.
And I think I'm coming to realize that even though I liked this movie, I don't like this specific, like, sub-genre of superhero movie. I didn't really enjoy Civil War as much as, like, a lot of the other Marvel movies. Not that it was bad, but just wasn't my favorite.
It's like this one. It's long.
And I just feel like the opportunity to team up all our superheroes and supervillains together sometimes is a little bit contrived, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy, like, the origin stories and getting a lot of background and, like, going deep into the characters. And the team-up movies, you don't have a lot of room for that. It's assumed that you know everybody's backstory that's in the movie, which, like, you know, you do, so whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like they're trying to wow you with how much star power they can, like, shove into one movie.
Yeah.
And it becomes about, like, star power and explosions more than, like, the personalities and relationships of the characters interacting with each other. That's not fair. Like, it does happen.
Listen.
There's a lot of plot development in this movie, too.
Yeah.
But, you know what
and
I mean?
And some character,
like,
development.
And some character development. So it's not, like, as cut and dry as that. But I guess, I just feel like they try to, like, shoehorn as many characters in as possible. And, like,
But that's the whole point of the movie. I'd say in the title, Infinity War is not about the war. It's about the infinity of Marvel's, like, awesomeness. Uh-huh. Like, that's the concept. So I would normally agree with you 9 times out of 10. I just think this time Marvel knocked it out of the park. They pulled off, like, an amazing feat mm-hmm. of storytelling. And the fact that I have seen all the movies and I was dazzled by all the stars in it. Like, I honestly, like, I was from a forgetting Marvel as just a movie event. I thought it was so awesome to see all these great actors in one movie.
I know. As the end crawl was coming on the screen, you were reading it. You were like, so many stars.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was just like really like fun. I mean, like, I've watched some of the press. They've been on Jimmy Kimmel and Colbert's and Conan. Uh-huh. Like, as an entire group of stars. Yeah. It's like, wow. Like, there's nothing else could have made this happen.
Yeah.
Hollywood doesn't, like, really do this the way Marvel has managed to do this. It's like they've just got all these A-listers, Robert Downey Jr., you know, Benedict Cumberbatch, Mark Ruffalo, like, just incredibly good actors. Uh-huh. And some that have actors that weren't really known that were elevated by the Marvel Universe, like Chris Evans and
Chris Olsen.
Right, Chris Hemsworth. Uh-huh. A lot of Chris's. Uh-huh. Chris Pratt, although he was kind of, he had his thing going before.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I just think it's really cool to have that much star power. It's just, like, fun. It was just, in that, from, to me, that aspect of it was fun. To see them all together, trading barbs, trading, you know, scenes. Mm-hmm. I just find that enjoyable from just a cinematic point of view. Like, it's, to me, that's why this movie's gonna be fun to rewatch on, you know, Blu-ray one day, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Just, it'll just be always entertaining to see these actors all together. So I like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, to me, that's like a plus.
Despite that being a complaint for me, I did overall enjoy the movie. I thought Josh Brolin
as
Thanos was, like, amazing.
He's the best part.
He
holds the whole movie together.
Right.
Which is crazy for a purple CGI character that's stupid looking.
Yeah.
So he's Thanos, obviously.
Right.
Thanos is, like, one of the, like, top three bad guys in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah.
He's the whole plot of the movie is he's after all the Infinity Stones, put in his magic glove.
Right.
And then he can control reality. And his goal is to kill half the universe. You know, I thought it was interesting. Like, I think Thanos' main goal in the comics is he wants to kill everybody because he's in love with Death, who's one of, like, we discussed, one of those cosmic overbeings.
Yeah.
And Death is, like, personified as a woman or something, and he's, like, physically, like, emotionally and romantically in love with this thing. Mm-hmm. And he's desperate to,
like, impress her.
Yeah, so, and, like, she always ignores him, like, that's the thing. And so he's always trying to kill, like, ginormous amounts of people to just, like, even get her to, like, wink at him or something.
Uh-huh.
And they, like, abandoned that. Like, I thought for sure that would be the motivating factor. Hmm. They would go there, but no, they, like, gave him, like, more of, like, a psychopathic, more grounded in reality reason.
Right.
Which is he feels that, well, he's from a planet where all his resources were depleted and everyone died because of it.
Right.
And he feels like if he could just kill off half the universe, then no one's going to have depleted resources.
Right.
Which doesn't seem like such a smart plan when you think about it, because...
I mean, populations are going to grow back. That's yeah. what happens. But also, like, if you really become this all-powerful being that can, like, morph reality in any way you want...
Make more food or something.
Or, like, move half the people of every planet onto some other double habitable planet. But uninhabited planet.
Right.
There's plenty of those,
make,
sure.
like, a copy of Earth, like, for example, in every galaxy where they're in the same orbit, and you just put half the people on that planet.
Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of workarounds for this plan.
Yeah, but, you know, that's just, like... getting silly to, like, debate it like that.
Yeah,
you
know? I know.
That's not the point.
Right.
It's a solid motivation.
Yeah.
It works for the movie.
The point is really that it's this theme that runs through, like, most superhero movies, I guess. Like, the good of one versus the good of many, you know?
Yeah, that's a very, like, right, exactly. That's, like, a common theme of how do you manage a thing of, like, trillions of beings. You know, that's, like, really the... Honestly, that's the narrative of Earth in the real world.
Yeah.
Is how do you govern a civilization where there's everyone's speaking a different language, everyone's got different cultures and ethnicities, people have different points of view, obviously, they have different interests. Like, he can be breaking it down to, like, there's people who like heavy metal and people who like dance pop. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, it's like the divisions in human society run so deep. And, you know, we've got these things called governments that are supposed to, like, quote-unquote manage our little mini-societies. And, you know, in each government, they all, none of them are perfect. They all have tons of problems. And it's almost like it's like this shared – I'm going to get a little deep here. But it's like this shared illusion we all buy into where we think that these governments, like, really are controlling our lives. Mm. And to some extent, they are, because so much of it is the imagination of us believing in them. Mm-hmm. But to another extent, they're not, because you could just totally isolate yourself either through choice or just being an idiot and, like, have no awareness of, like, the greater society around you. Mm-hmm. And do whatever the fuck you want and be as good or bad as you want. I mean, that's how you have people who are, like, serial killers that get away with it for decades. 'Cause, like, really, it's like, you know, policemen don't have magic powers. The government doesn't have magic powers. If you just, like, kill someone silently in the night and bury the body somewhere, like, who the fuck's going to know if no one saw you and you leave no traces of evidence? You know what I mean? It's like, that's... So this, like, illusion that, you know...
Tie this back to the movie for me.
I'm saying that, like, managing a civilization is incredibly hard, complex, and difficult. Uh-huh. And that there's no easy answers to these questions, because we're all sort of independent individuals running around doing whatever we want anyway.
Okay.
You know, no matter what the society is. Uh-huh. You know, we're all our own little, like, psychopathic, like, Thanoses with our own, like, worldview and stuff. Uh-huh. Like, influencing things, making our own waves and ripples. Like, no one can control all that.
Except Thanos has magic powers.
Right. So, exactly. But that's, like, okay, right. I've really gone off a tangent here. But do you kind of know what I was saying, though? It's the theme of Earth. It's like we're all coming together, the sane people. Forget about the serial killers. Like, uh-huh. We're all coming together trying to manage this thing to make sure everyone gets enough food, enough, like, shelter, security, whatever it is they need.
Yeah.
And it's hard because you're just billions of people all doing whatever the fuck they want. And there's just, like, going to be no easy way. Like, we all have to buy into the invisibleness of it to, like, try to make it work.
Uh-huh.
So, and then, like... It gets so big, though, that you have all these metaphysical questions, like, that Thanos is trying to solve.
Gotcha, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the other side of that coin is, like, the Avengers' point of view, which is that despite our many differences, like, you have to keep the thousand-foot view.
Yeah.
Which is that, like...
Love and goodness.
Humanity has more in common than they have different. And right. So you have to value every life...
And that death
equally,
is right,
you know?
Like
it's fine to, like, speculate, like, oh, all our problems would be solved if half the population weren't here, but it's always the half of the population that you're not in. So right. When you take it down to the individual level, everyone has the same motivations of, like, survival and, like, mm-hmm. you know, food, nourishment, shelter, love, like, so you have to square those two things, and that's what the movie's basically dealing with.
I mean, and it's a story of good and evil in the sense that, like, if you're good, you believe that, yeah, the world's got problems, but we can, using our, like, ingenuity and our creativity and our imaginations and our feelings of love, we can figure out solutions where no one has to fucking die to save ourselves. And whereas an evil person's, like, they might even have all those, like, goodness, like Thanos supposedly has. Mm-hmm. Like, he wants people to flourish and to be have, like, love and stuff. But he's like, no, we have to kill people in order for that to exist. And I'm the only one who knows how to do it.
Right.
Like, a good person's going to say, like, no, there's just got to be another path. Or other, like, it's better to die free than it is to kill a bunch of people so we could live and, you know, just for the sake of it.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Like, we shouldn't trade our ideals for survival.
Right.
So that's the meta theme. And the point is, like, it's all beautifully, like, written and spoken by Thanos for the most part. His motivations are clear.
Uh-huh.
He's got a point of view. He's got some heart to him somehow. Josh Brolin imbues the character, the CGI Purple Man, with a lot of, like, soul and depth.
Yeah.
Which I was surprised by. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to suck.
Yeah.
And he doesn't suck. He's
really
good.
Well, not because of Josh Brolin, just because of, like, CGI.
Well,
the state of CGI.
Well, that's true, but it's his face, though. But it's definitely Josh Brolin's face.
Yeah.
And it's his acting. It's, there's there's a lot of his voice, whatever, comes through.
Right, I'm saying, like, that's what's good about it, that I didn't expect would be able to come through.
Yes, yeah, I agree. So, I think Thanos was great, and it's, like, he's great on that level. He's also great on the level of the spectacle. It's like, fun to see him fight the Hulk in the opening scenes, and the fact that he can beat up the Hulk was shocking and cool to witness. Like, that was, like an interesting scene right away to get out there.
Yeah.
What else to say about the movie? I mean, I'm just going to talk about stuff that just stuck with me emotionally that I really loved. I love the pairing of Iron Man and Spider-Man, which is, like, up until this point, I didn't really think of it as so much of a thing. Mm-hmm. But obviously, Iron Man's the guy in the Civil War movie who introduces Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's his mentor.
And then it's the whole plot of Spider-Man Homecoming is, to an extent, that they're still sort of together. But even going forward in this next one, I didn't think, like, okay, they don't really... They shouldn't have,
like,
too much...
Like, what do they have to do with each other?
Yeah, but... And here, it's, like, almost, like, father-son, like, in a much deeper way.
Yeah.
And it's, like, the fact that they get teamed up was smart. Mm-hmm. Like, Spider-Man could have ended up with any of the little groups we see.
Yeah.
But here, he's just, like, clearly teamed up with Iron Man and Robert Downey Jr., who, by the way, I read yesterday, Sonia, Robert Downey Jr., and I just read some random article, I could be wrong, he got $200 million fucking dollars for Avengers 3 and 4. $100 million a piece.
Wow.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah.
And the budgets, and this is what I couldn't make sense. Like, I'm not sure, based on the wording of the article, it's a little hard to read. He either got $200 million for each one, or $200 million for the two. I'm thinking it's for the two. Mm-hmm. But then, also not worded as well, they said the budgets of the movies were $1 billion.
Uh-huh.
So does that mean $1 billion each budget or together? Because they filmed them both at the same time.
Right.
Three and four. So I don't know. But the point is, like, that's absurd that he got $200 million for the like, of all the, imagine, of all the stars in that movie, and they're all on the set, like, it just must be weird on that, like, weird social level when they're all hanging out together.
If it's that, like, information is public and, like...
And, yeah, that's his payday. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And because he's, you know, with huge actors, too. It's like, how much... I mean, I'm curious to read all the actor salaries after reading that, that he gets $100 or $200 million for these things. I mean, that's just nuts.
Yeah.
And to me, like, that alone makes you think that he's going to be done with Iron Man forever after this.
Mm.
Because they can't just keep paying it. I mean, like, if his salary rose to $100 million a film, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, anyway... I find it, I like that, so from the standpoint of knowing that he's getting paid $100 million for Avengers 3, supposedly, him hanging out with the Spider-Man, I think that says a lot from the Marvel production side of things, that they're pairing their A-list guy with Spider-Man, who's technically the A-list character, and they just did a really good job of that, like, and I love seeing them together.
Right, and then the other addition to that team was Doctor Strange.
Right.
Who... I mean,
which is weird that they would, because the criticism there was that Doctor Strange the movie was too much like Iron Man. It's about a white man who's kind of rich and got a goatee.
Yeah,
and he's arrogant and an asshole, and he has to learn how to be a hero.
Right.
So, and everyone's like, oh, it's just like Iron Man. But then they have the balls to put those two characters together in the entire movie.
Yeah,
which is great.
Yeah. Yeah, the interaction worked really well. It was funny because it is almost like each one is looking in the mirror a little bit, and they're, like, disgruntled at each other.
And they both play Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
It's so funny. See, because to me, that's, like, where I get a lot of enjoyment out of. It's like I tend to see beyond just the confines of the movie. I look at it as just, like...
Sherlock and Sherlock.
Yeah, I mean, like, I see, like, all the dynamic that goes into these things. You know what I mean? Because it's, like... Making a movie, especially this size, it's like it's a huge community effort of some kind.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, that just, like, all gets baked into it in the subtext somewhere. You know what I mean? So, anyway, it's just... all that's great.
Yeah.
And so, right, that's, like, that was, like, such a great trio of Doctor Strange, Iron Man, and Spider-Man.
Yes.
Really beautiful. And, okay, and let's cut to the end. Here's some more big spoilers. I mean, Spider-Man dies.
Everyone dies.
Well, all the new characters die. The original Avengers live, and all the other characters die. But just the scene of Spider-Man dying in Iron Man's arms was just wonderful.
Yeah.
It was so sad and messed up, and, like, kids were really, like, upset in the theater. I could hear them murmuring.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they don't understand that these characters come back to life all the time. And...
Right, yeah. But it wasn't just when Spider-Man died. It was, like, when Black Panther dies,
that was the
like,
most
the
emotional
kid sitting
one.
Next to
yeah.
me, some like you know, stranger's kid was just like, "Oh, my favorite superhero."
Yeah, yeah,
no.
I know.
You know
it was
just, like really upset.
That was so beautiful when Black Panther died. First of all, the way they all turned to dust was really haunting, and like, there's something gorgeous and like super sad and quiet about it.
Yeah,
that the way that they chose all the deaths. It was just so just because like a lot of them had little awareness that it was happening in the moment too, which
yeah.
is kind of messed up.
They had like 3 seconds to say their last words before
right.
they like spun away into the wind.
But just when Black Panther's like helping out his friend, I think Okoye or something, and she's like, he's like, this is not a place to die.
Yeah.
And then he's the one who dies, and
right.
it's just so, and she has the look of astonishment on her face.
Yeah.
It was just so messed up.
Yeah.
Bucky dies right next to Captain America.
Yeah. I just was gonna say, like, I like that. I like having Wakanda and like the Black Panther universe rolled into this, and
mm-hmm.
like seeing them again so shortly after the Black Panther movie was really
yeah.
cool.
It was great. It was a great sequence.
Yeah.
When Thor comes back with his hammer and explodes and like kills all these creatures,
yeah,
it was so
everyone
satisfying.
In the theater was cheering.
They
for
were
him.
Cheering so loud, clapping and screaming. Yes, it was nuts.
Yeah,
which is I'm like I can't believe people actually clap in movies. You know, personally, I mean, maybe if you clap them, great. But like to me, it's like
I mean, I personally am not like a movie audience clapper.
Right.
Like, but I do kind of like
it's
as
fun.
Part of the
it
movie
is fun,
going experience
yeah.
when like the crowd is enthusiastic. It makes it feel a little more interactive. It's almost like you're. It's like halfway to seeing a play or something almost, you
but
know?
But it's like, normally when you clap in a play, it's because you're clapping the
to let the actors
the energies
know that you're,
know you
yeah.
love them. But when you're clapping in a theater, it's almost like, it's stupid, but I guess the positive, it's a community thing. It's
yeah.
like we're all in the community together enjoying this.
Yeah.
So, you're right, it is interesting.
It, like, adds to the feeling a little bit.
Yeah.
There's something I like about it, even though I don't really...
Well, this is why I'm saying, like, I'm surprised. You know, my reaction to the movie I thought was great, and you were, like, a little, like, not so into it. But, like, to me, it was, like, fun. It was, like, an event. There's people clapping and, like, screaming at the screen and...
Yeah.
Characters dying. Like, I was a little shocked that you weren't, like, so into it as much.
Yeah, I don't know. There were just some things about it. First of all, like...
Oh, we saw it in 3D. That was terrible.
Yeah, I don't care about 3D in particular. It doesn't detract from it, but
for me, it
really,
detracted
like,
big time.
I
couldn't focus on the screen. As, like,
again, that's on you. You bought the 3D tickets.
Well, because I wanted
like,
the earliest time. Yeah,
I know,
my
but
mistake.
Like all these things that you're complaining
yeah.
about are like totally in your
right.
control.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know. Like, in a way, excuse me. In a way, like I see why the fight came to Wakanda. Like,
yeah.
it's this super powerful nation. That, like, has the ability to deal with these, like, global catastrophes.
Yeah.
On the other hand, like, it's not really their fight, like...
Well, the idea was that, because Vision was there after the Mind Stone, so it's wherever Vision was going to be.
Yeah.
So Vision was in Wakanda.
Right.
So that's why it made sense that... that's why there was the fight in New York earlier, another
right.
sequence I really liked, is because Doctor Strange was there with the Time Stone.
Yeah.
So that's why they landed in New York City.
Right. I don't know.
But you said you liked Wakanda, right?
I like that Wakanda was there. Like, as I was watching the movie, I was like, oh, gosh, like, all, you know, like, all these monsters are coming, and you see, like, the Wakandan
mm-hmm.
army is, like, really not that big, and I just was like, I want to keep seeing Wakanda in future movies. I don't
right,
want them to,
yeah.
like, kill off all their warriors
well,
in this sequence.
I mean...
Which, like, they didn't,
no,
like...
Yeah. And everyone's coming back to life. I
yeah.
mean, it's honestly... That's the one thing Marvel had going against it was that all the contracts are in place... We know, like, there's going to be sequels to Black Panther and Spider-Man and whatever else.
Yeah.
These actors aren't going anywhere. I mean, that's the one thing that took away from the ending having any kind of real impact unless you're, like, a child.
Uh-huh.
And which is fine. For children, it's actually pretty cool that they would do that.
Yeah.
You know, because the kids
it's
don't really know. Yeah,
I guess.
It's, like, more magical. But for the adults in the audience, we all know it's, like, forget about even with the movie contracts. We just know the trope of comic books.
Yeah.
Nobody stays dead.
What else was there? I liked seeing Scarlet Witch's powers. They like
oh, yeah.
really showcased that. Like
she got
more.
Like a, yeah. She was. I found her the least annoying she's been in. I haven't enjoyed her character up until this movie.
They haven't really let her do much up until this movie.
Well, the whole point she was bastardized because she's supposed to be a mutant. She's supposed to be the daughter of Magneto. Her brother's Quicksilver. You know, it's like none of that's in the movie.
Yeah.
So she's just some weird like red energy wielding like thingamajig, you know, with a weird accent, and it's like. you know, it's like they take away, they robbed her of all the depth that she has of being in the X-Men universe.
Right.
So, but, you know, here in this movie, she was really good, though.
She was really good in this movie at the expense of Vision. Vision didn't really use any of his powers. He was just totally victimized the whole movie.
Yeah, he never got a chance, because he's like Superman, essentially.
But he also, in previous movies, doesn't really get to... like do a whole lot. We don't get a lot of backstory on him.
That's the problem with Vision. He's super powerful. That like it's like Professor X. Like you can't have him be like fully active, or because he could just stop everybody instantly.
But to me, it was like they all these other characters have these backstories that you know from previous movies. Vision is supposed to be so powerful, but we don't really know why, and we don't get to see him be powerful. And he's like one of the cornerstones of this movie because. Of the Mind Stone that Thanos is after.
Yeah.
So, like, for him to play such a major role in this movie and not have a little bit more, like, action or exposition or something.
Can I defend it as someone who's, like, watched the movies a lot more than you have?
Okay.
I mean, he starts off as the voice of Jarvis.
Yeah.
With the Iron Man suit.
Right.
So a lot of the depth comes from there.
Okay.
And then in Avengers 2, he's transformed into Vision.
Yeah.
By Tony Stark and Bruce Banner. And so it's like Jarvis' character gets to come to life as the actor Paul Bettany. Another cool thing Marvel did for that character, who's just a voiceover guy.
Uh-huh.
And they actually gave him a cool part. So, you know, he's got some depth. I mean, like, there's depth there in the sense of, like, the voice has been there throughout the entire... It's going back to Iron Man 1, at least.
Okay.
The artificial intelligence...
Right. Oh, I guess... Yeah, you're right. I kind of forgot about that,
honestly. But you're right. When he becomes Vision, though, there's, like... It doesn't make much sense in the sense... And he doesn't get much... He's just this weird character now that's trying to figure out, like, he's alive and how does he adjust to the real world kind of thing.
Got it. Okay. So this whole thing with the Mind Stone, like, is his character exposition, basically.
Yeah, yeah. It's
okay.
Like he,
I just wasn't
he,
reading it
there's
that
like
way.
A, well, there was a line in the movie where he talks about... Or somebody mentions that he's Tony Stark, he's Bruce Banner, he's Jarvis, he's Ultron. He's, like, all mixed in one.
Yeah.
And it's become incredibly complex with 2 trillion connections.
Okay. Maybe it's just been, like, so spread out over the other movies that I didn't really, like, put it together until they said that.
Right. But,
yeah. Okay.
So, other things I liked. I loved Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor. All that stuff was great.
Uh-huh.
Very humorous. Very just... They got a lot of humor and emotion out of those characters.
Yep. I like Adolescent Groot.
Yeah, he was pretty funny. I can't believe that's Vin Diesel.
Yeah, I know.
It's insane that Vin Diesel's the voice of Groot, which is... It just must be such a joke to be there at the sound recording booth when they're doing his lines.
Mm.
And then... And also Matthew McConaughey... No, is that... Not Matthew McConaughey. Bradley Cooper as the voice of Rocket Raccoon is another, like... Just all these A-listers in these, like, minor parts.
Yeah.
Is ridiculous. But anyway, I like that the whole like subplot of Thor getting a new hammer, traveling to the world where they build the weapons and the hearts of the
Peter
dying
Dinklage.
Stars.
Yeah, was great.
Yeah, that was amazing. Peter Dinklage is a dwarf giant. That was just a great sequence when he gets shot with the power of a neutron star or something, and he survives and gets a new hammer. It's totally badass. And
I really like the Gamora plotline in this movie too.
That was great.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
And her connection to Thanos. You know, the one thing I didn't really understand.
Remind me how much I love Gamora and Nebula.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And Nebula makes in like a couple of appearances too. That's great. Do you know why? Like, what's supposed to be the motivation for Thanos, like adopting Gamora as a little girl?
I don't know. I found that, you know, because that's, like, supposed to be his connection to, like, love and, like, being sort of, like, a humanistic character.
Yeah.
And they're really trying to, like, make you believe that he loved Gamora because he has to sacrifice her to get the Soul Stone.
Right.
So there... But I found that to be a little bit putting, like, a square block in a circle shape. Like, it didn't... Like, because you're right. It doesn't make sense. Like, why is he...
Square pegging around
home. Right, exactly. Yeah, I can't remember that metaphor. It's like, why... Like... Why does he need to adopt a daughter? And if he loves her so much, like, because in the Guardians movies, they talk about how they were tortured, Nebula and Gamora, by him their whole lives,
right?
And they were treated like shit, and they openly expressed despising
disdain.
Him, yeah, disdain for him the whole time.
Yeah.
So it's like, what do you like? He loves them, you know, like they're like he's a father.
I mean, Thanos is just like a pretty fucked up guy, right? So it's like he loves them, and that's his way of showing them that he loves them. Is
but
like,
they kept pitching this
all these ways that like is actually hurting them, but he. Thinks it's for their good or something. You know,
I don't
like
know.
It fits with his character, the way he like treats them growing up.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make sense to me that he would want to like adopt some kids to begin with.
Like, it's so strange. And like, and the fact, and there's like another detail around to that extent where they showed Thanos' backstory on Titan.
Yeah.
Where he's like, it was once a beautiful, peaceful world like Earth, and they showed had blue sky and green grass and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, but then we ran out of resources, and I was the only one who knew the solution.
Right.
And obviously he went insane. But the point is, it's like...
Well, no, it sounds like he was insane before that, because he was pitching to his government on Titan that they should kill half the population at random.
He's like a messed up Jor-El from Superman.
Right.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's just... You're right. It's just there's something that's not connecting as to, like, you don't get the sense that he's got a heart.
Right. Because in the scene where he has to, like, sacrifice Gamora... She's like kind of laughing and saying like, oh, you don't love anything.
And that's what the audience thinks too.
I thought the way it was going to go was that she was going to say like, the only person you love is yourself. So it's like an ironic situation where he has to like throw himself off the edge of the cliff. And then a little more mysterious. Maybe he comes back to life because of the stone that he gets.
Or he has other stones that keep him alive and he cheats the system.
Right. Or
right.
Something. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the fact that he had to sacrifice her and they show this whole like emotional exchange between them and it proves that he really loved her. Like that was a different direction than I thought it was
so
gonna go. Weird.
You're right. Because that was such a great line by Gamora. So well written when she says, haha, the joke's on you. You don't have anyone that you love in the universe.
Right.
He's like, no, I love you. It, like, to me, that's like, it was a little stupid. It's like, you do love her? Okay.
I mean, I don't know.
Because Gamora sounded right in that moment. She sounded so right.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the fact is like, no, I love you. It's like, you do? Okay, whatever.
Right, but you're willing to sacrifice her anyway.
I mean, it was believable enough.
Right, yeah.
He's a psychopath, so. Yeah. That was cool. And then the Red Skull appears there as well. That was kind of weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would have preferred it, like, instead of the Red Skull being this ethereal ghost who is now... leading people to the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
I would have preferred it if he was brought back in the way where he's just Captain America's villain again. I love the idea of Captain America having to fight him forever. What else? Stuff that was interesting. I just, in general, I was super impressed. I really thought, like, for what it was... So, I totally got that your quibble with it is that it's a big team-up movie, and it's confusing, and it's, like, long, and it's, like, why do all the characters have to...
It's confusing. It does make it long, and it makes it feel long, because you're constantly jumping from, like, one storyline to another, and, like... I don't know why I have such a problem with it. It feels unfocused to me.
Yeah. To me, it's, like, that's kind of the point of the movie, in the sense it's... It's an event movie, and to an extent, it was all leading up to this.
Yeah.
But to another extent, it's just like an annual in a Marvel run of comics throughout the year. You get one big comic at the end of the year that's like an epic event, and it's like extra long. It's overstuffed with characters. You know all the characters. You've been reading all the stories throughout the year, enjoying your regular comics as you enjoy them.
Yeah.
And the fun thing about it, it's like if you get the X-Men annual, for instance, it's like they all meet the Avengers in there, and they'll go team up on some quest.
Right.
And in the course of the annual comic, the Avengers will talk about adventures they had, and there'll be these little like boxes that say like "See Avengers number 293" to like catch up on this detail.
Right.
And that's part of the fun of it too, in the sense it's like even if you're just an X-Men fan, it's like oh wow, like maybe I do want to buy these Avengers comics and like see. What they've been doing.
So same here. Even if you only watch the Iron Man movies or something, it makes you like, oh, maybe I'll go and watch Spider-Man and see what he's up to.
And that's what's beautiful about it. And they capture the spirit of Marvel Comics in this great way. And it's proven to be a big success. It's like...
Yeah.
And
people love seeing all the characters together. I mean, that's the whole thing.
And it's the key to their success, and it's what's proven to be successful. It's just funny to me that they've just stuck to that like core idea of the comic book publishing company that they came up with.
Right.
That Jack Kirby and Stan Lee and all the others, you know, Steve Ditko.
No, it makes perfect Chris sense. Claremont. Like it makes people feel like the universe that they've created is that much more real because all of the characters don't exist in isolation from each other.
Right.
And like I get it. It's not that I hated the movie. I'm not like staunchly against it or anything. I'm kind of playing devil's advocate to you because you liked it so much, but also like it's maybe a little bit of like comic book movie fatigue starting to set in, which we've spoken about before. I mean,
you're not excited to see how it concludes?
I'm going to go watch the rest of the, the story play out. Yeah. So, you know, I guess it wasn't my favorite, but it was enjoyable.
Okay.
You know?
All right. Yeah. To me, it was like up there as like top three. It might, like, it might be the best one. I don't know. It doesn't even matter. There's no sense in making them the best. They're just all of, like, one piece in a large way. And it's, to me, it's exciting and fun. Okay, let's speak. Speaking of which, I know I'm putting you on the spot a little bit. But if you, off the top of your head, what are your favorite Marvel movies? Just, like, don't even think about it. Like, which ones come to mind?
Black Panther.
Yeah.
The first Iron Man. Uh-huh. And the first Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay.
Are probably, like, the ones that I had, like, the most positive viewing experience.
Okay, cool. So it's, like, actually, that's, like, a nice, like, mixture of time periods and different characters.
Yeah.
For me, it's the first Iron Man. I really loved Spider-Man Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
I so enjoyed myself when I saw that. Doctor Strange, I really liked for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked all the new ones.
Honestly, I tend towards the newer ones. I think lately Marvel's really been just figuring out the formula better.
Uh-huh.
I really love, you know, Black Panther and Thor Ragnarok and this new Avengers.
Yeah, I like that one a lot too.
You know, so, like, to me, oh, and Captain America Winter Soldier is, like, still great. But, like, the point is, like, it's more the newer ones. You know, honestly, I didn't like Guardians series that much. I like, obviously I like them, but
I think I
like them the most in this movie, actually. And then I really enjoyed it way more in this movie than I have in the previous two.
I think I liked that it was just a very, like, different flavor than what we had seen before that, you know?
Right.
And, like, I didn't really know what to expect going in, and then to see something that was, like, consistent with the universe, but still, like, very different was, like, a nice surprise.
I mean, honestly, like, I was so impressed by this movie, and I guess we'll start wrapping it up here a bit, like...
Yeah.
It just, it gives me so much excitement for the X-Men being taken over by these Marvel people. There's X-Men movies I like and dislike, like everyone. I'm really excited for Deadpool 2.
Mm-hmm.
Not that excited for New Mutants. Not that excited for X-Men Dark Phoenix. I am loving Legion.
Yeah.
So it's not like Fox isn't, like, failed at this.
Right.
But... I just think the X-Men in under this creative control is going to be ridiculous, because I just like those characters more.
Mm-hmm.
I also like the Fantastic Four more than I like the Avengers 2. And not even so much the Fantastic Four, but their whole universe of villains and other side characters like Silver Surfer, Galactus. I just think that when Marvel gets that stuff, they're going to... like, that's going to be... Everyone's going to be wondering, how do you top Avengers Infinity War? It's going to be this new era, this new phase, where it's going to be mainly about the X-Men and mainly about these Fantastic Four characters and Spider-Man, too, because he's never going to go away. And because I love Spider-Man, obviously. Like, they're really, like, they've only barely begun with Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Venom movie, I'm not that excited about. People actually gave me a lot of crap on the Facebook group about how I was bleh about the Venom trailer. I was like, really? You guys thought that was great? Like, okay, so maybe I'm wrong. Like, maybe it is going to be really good. I mean, Tom Hardy's a great actor, but...
Yeah. Well, it's also just such a classic storyline. I think, like... I don't know.
I don't know
if it's going to be good or not. We're going to watch it. We're going to see.
Right. I think the Venom storyline's classic in the Spider-Man universe. It wasn't done well in Spider-Man 3.
Right.
But, like, divorcing it from Spider-Man... this new Spider-Man universe, I think, is a mistake.
Mm.
Supposedly Tom Holland's gonna have a cameo in it, but okay, whatever. He's not supposed to be a cameo. He's, like, a main player.
Yeah, right.
And I would like to see, in 5 years, an older Tom Holland take on Venom as this new challenge.
Right.
Like, to me, they're messing it up. Whatever. Point is...
there's room for a reboot, because that's what Spider-Man has been about.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of sad. Anyway, Spider-Man, X-Men, Fantastic Four, very much looking forward to the future, especially given what Marvel's been capable of with the freaking Avengers, who, like, let's face it, they're, like, on the lower level of tiered heroes. And they did such an amazing job. Like, now everyone loves Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America, when before they're, like, if you were buying X-Men comics like I was, you were not looking to really buy Avengers. I mean, they're just boring. They're, like, lame. I mean, that might be unfair, because I haven't really read that many Avengers comics, if any. But the point is, like, you know, they're just not, weren't as fun. I mean, you had Wolverine and Cyclops and Gambit. I mean, there's, like, so much great stuff going on in X-Men.
Uh-huh.
So, like I said, just I'd say it all the time, but I can't wait to see X-Men in the hands of Marvel. Although, I'll say one last negative thing regarding X-Men, Marvel Cinematic Universe, Disney. I do think, again, to reiterate, I think it's evil that Disney has gotten control of all this stuff in the sense of, like, a capitalistic corporate overlord point of view. If you want to depress yourself, read anything about Ike Perlmutter, who is the chairman of Marvel, the publishing arm. He used to be in control of the Marvel movies too, and when they merged with Disney, he was for a little bit. Now he's not really doing that, but he is a really like not great human being for a lot of reasons. So that will depress you just about like loving Marvel, loving the X-Men. So I was just reading about that. That really put a bad taste in my mouth. So I don't want to say too much about that guy because he might sue me. Who knows? I doubt it. I'm just saying. Some weird evil going on there. Mm-hmm. All right. Beyond that, that's all I got to say about Avengers Infinity War. Mm-hmm. Excited for the next one. I'm excited to see Ant-Man and the Wasp. I'm curious to see how that like plays off of the events of this movie. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling it's going to take place like 5 months before.
Yeah, so they don't have to.
It's not going to be a universe where half humanity is dead. Right. Yeah. I'm excited to see that. I'm excited to see Captain Marvel, which they hint at is the final spoiler at the end with Nick Fury when he dies.
Yeah.
That'll be a movie that takes place in the 90s. That'll be weird. They're bringing back Lee Pace to play Ronan. Lee Pace, as you know, from Halt and Catch Fire, the main character in that. Like he was like sort of like the minor major bad guy in Thor 2. It's cool that he's coming back in a Marvel movie. Yeah. They must have recognized that he's an awesome actor and like, hey, let's like make him better. So there's lots to look forward to in the world of Marvel and fun.
Yes.
Last things I want to say, follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson if you like. Join our X-Men Task Facebook group, X-Men Task Podcast. Just search it out there. Rate and review is 5 stars. I discovered you can read iTunes reviews on Android phones, so I've been able to catch up on them, and it's really, we really appreciate it. Bryce left us a beautiful review.
Yes, our hearts were warmed. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you to everyone. And that's all I got. Sonia, any last words of wisdom?
No.
Really? Nothing?
Yeah, no.
No words to the wise.
No.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night.